evening. Welcome to tonight's edition of the Mike Malloy Show. How you doing? Did you have a good Wednesday? Huh? Craziness abounds, doesn't it? Oh my God, craziness abounds. Abides. Rebounds. Something. I don't know. Hey, listen, this hour is sponsored by Andrew. And it's sponsored, well, he's the one that is sponsoring it, but he says it's sponsored by Hexa Store. Hexa Store. A proud supporter of quality talk radio. Hexa. It's HEXISTOR. Hexa Store provides online computer backup services for small to medium businesses. And Andrew says to learn more, visit us at hexistore.com. HEXISTOR. That's easy. Hexa. HEXISTOR. Hexistore.com. Thanks, Andrew. Check out his website, will you? We have a follow-up here. A couple of people sent this to me. Was it last night we were talking about this freak in Minnesota? Republican State Representative Tom Hackbarth wrote the nasty-ass email to a woman who is a public employee and a member of Public Employees Union in Minnesota. And she wrote him an email, I guess, that said it might be a good thing to stop picking on public employees. You know, they are hardworking, decent Americans. And his idea of balancing the budget in Minnesota on nothing but cuts, no tax increases, no demand that corporations pay their share, a fair share, nothing, that it all come from cuts, which is what all the Republicans in Minnesota are doing. They're trying to destroy their own state. It's really astonishing. I can understand why national Republicans are trying to destroy the United States, but when you think about these Republicans in Minnesota consciously and deliberately trying to destroy the state of Minnesota, what's up with that? I mean, it's crazy. Anyway, this woman wrote to Hackbarth and said, you know, why don't you go to the 2% of wealthy Minnesotans who could stand a tax increase, you know, the millionaires and billionaires, and try that instead of cutting funds from women, infants, and children's feeding programs or Minnesota's sort of state Medicaid. The CHIPS program also, the Children's Health Insurance program, all these things that the Republicans are trying to destroy deliberately and consciously in Minnesota because Republicans are amoral and they're just full of a vacuum. There's no there inside them. So she wrote that. So Hackbarth writes back a snotty email, a few sentences, more or less accusing her of supporting Hitler in his attempt to eradicate the Jews in Germany, of supporting Castro, who Hackbarth misinterpreted as someone with murderous armies that were hell-bent on destroying capitalism and destroying, he didn't even say capitalism, he said the bankers and the corporate structure. I guess he did say capitalism. And the truth is that there is some truth to that, since capitalism is a predatory, filthy, filthy enterprise. But what Castro was doing was trying to reclaim his country away from Fulgencio Batista. Anyway, he accused this woman, this psychopath, Hackbarth, of all these things. Well, she forwarded both emails to the chief executive, I believe, of the Public Employees Union. And he asked for, he wrote to Hackbarth and said, you know, what's up with this? Why are you doing this? How do you equate a woman who is asking for rational leadership? How do you equate her with Hitler? Or your interpretation of Castro? You know, why do you call her a communist or a Nazi? What? Well, to this point, I guess Hackbarth hasn't responded to the public employee union head. Anyway, a couple of you did some research on Hackbarth, and I appreciate it. I'm going to go with the one here from Rob in Austin, Texas. All Rob did was Google Hackbarth. He came up with this from the Minnesota Star Tribune. Listen to this. Republican State Representative Tom Hackbarth has been stripped of his leadership duties, at least temporarily, after an incident last week in which police confronted the legislator after he parked in a St. Paul Planned Parenthood lot and was seen with a handgun. House Speaker-designate Kurt Zellers said in a statement, I believe this is from about a year ago, House Speaker-designate Kurt Zellers said in a statement, quote, due to an incident on Tuesday, November 16th, State Representative Tom Hackbarth has been suspended from any current and pending leadership roles within the Minnesota House Republican Caucus. The suspension will remain in effect until the issue is fully resolved, end quote. Hackbarth, at the time, was slated to become chairman of the House Environment and Natural Resources Committee when the legislature was to convene in January. Hackbarth said in an earlier Star Tribune report that it was a misunderstanding when he parked his car in the Planned Parenthood lot in Highland Park. When St. Paul police confronted Hackbarth, they ordered him out of his car at gunpoint and handcuffed him and questioned him. Hackbarth, who has a conceal and carry permit for his gun, was not arrested or charged. Hackbarth told police he was trying to find a woman he met through an internet dating service. He said he was not familiar with the Highland Park area, and he didn't know he pulled into the Planned Parenthood lot. He had reportedly asked the woman to dinner that night, you know, over the internet, but she told him that she had previously agreed to meet with a female friend in Highland Park. Hackbarth suspected she was meeting another man instead, so he came to the area to look for her. When he didn't see the woman's car, he returned to his truck and left, and that's when the police caught up with him. Oh, Hackbarth said he is in the process of divorcing his wife of 25 years, and the Cedar, Minnesota resident just won re-election for an eighth term, representing Elk River, Oak Grove, and East Bethel. Well, isn't that special? He winds up in a Planned Parenthood parking lot with a loaded gun. He tells police he was supposed to meet a woman he met through an online dating service, but he thought she was going to meet a different man, so he shows up with a gun. To do what? You psycho bastard. What were you going to do, Hackbarth? You crazed freak. What were you going to do? Did you think she would bring this imaginary man to the parking lot of Planned Parenthood and get in the back seat of the car with him? And then you could come up and shoot them both? What were you doing, you psycho with a gun? Oh, my God. Rob in Austin, Texas. Thanks. And this guy, is this the kind of people y'all elect in Minnesota? Huh? Of course, I could say that about, is this the kind of people y'all elect in California? Is this the kind of people y'all, you know, just pick a state. I happen to love Minnesota. I've only been there a few times, but every time I've been there, I think it's a great state. I had no idea they were so crazy, these legislators. This is like Wisconsin. It's almost as bad as that. Look, I live in the deep South. The deep South. I mean, the deep South. And I'm used to crazy down here. I really am. I'm used to a certain brand of crazy, like Neil Bortz. But sits in a Planned Parenthood parking lot with a loaded gun because his online date might be out with another man? Oh, my God.
Strange. Standing up to the flying monkey right. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Craziness abounds. Abides? Hackbarth, this Republican in Minnesota, is just one of, if you listen to this program on a regular basis, you know, it's just one of countless examples of Republican insanity. You want another one? Neil Bortz here in Atlanta, who is syndicated on like 200 radio stations. I mean, he's all over the place. And he is dearly loved by right-wingers. Oh, my God. Neil Bortz is just, he's been here in Atlanta for like 40 years on the air. and his fans just love him to death. So yesterday, he went on his program and he said the following. And I'm going to use the kind of dialect or the way Bortz talks, because he does this. Yesterday he said, you know what? I, for one, am tired of putting up with this crap. And you want to know why I moved out of Atlanta and only spent a couple of weeks a year in this town? That's one of the reasons. Carjackings, violence, people getting shot. It's ridiculous. This city harbors an urban culture of violence. And I want you to look around. You drive into the city. The railroad overpass is on the downtown connector, covered with graffiti. The railroad overpass. There are interstate overpasses. There are six interstate. Never mind. Covered with graffiti. And that's just an advertisement for anybody, for everybody coming into this town, that we really don't give a damn about those who would screw up our quality of life around here. We really just don't care. We don't care enough to paint over graffiti on the overpasses that come into our city. Advertising, welcome to Atlanta. Here's some of our finest graffiti from some of our finest urban thugs and their little gang signs. And pick up the paper tomorrow morning. Read about all the carjackings. Read about the innocent people shot for the pure D hell of it. This town is starting to look like a garbage heap. And we got too damn many urban thugs, yo, ruining the quality of life. He said that. And we got too damn many urban thugs, yo, ruining the, see, that's talking Negro to Neil. Neil's, yo! He's talking urban thug there. I wonder if he means white thugs or KKKers or skinhead gangs in Atlanta. And we got too many urban thugs, yo, ruining the quality of life for everybody. And I'll tell you what it's going to take. You people, you need to have a gun. You need to have training. You need to know how to use that gun. You need to get a permit to carry that gun. And you do, in fact, need to carry that gun. And we need to see some dead thugs littering the landscape in Atlanta. We need to see the next guy that tries to carjack you shot dead right where he stands. We need more dead thugs in the city. And let their mamas say, he was a good boy. He just fell in with the good crowd. And then lock her ass up, too. Oh, Neil. Neil's been terrified of black people since he was a young lad in Texas. He's just been terrified of black people. When I first met Neil 25 years ago, I could not believe what I was looking at. Here's this great big old tall white man. Big son of a bitch. I kind of stooped over because he got bad back trouble. But big old son of a bitch, right? And walking around talking about, and using the N-word and you know, talking about the Negroes and the black folks and using the code words that white folks use, you know, urban. We're talking urban, right? Right, Neil? Urban. So now what Neil, now I wonder if any of his affiliates, Neil has 2, by God, 100 radio stations that carry his program. Would any one of them send him an email and say, Neil, you've gone too far, man. You're advocating murdering people in Atlanta. That's what you're advocating. And we can see through your carefully coded language. You know what you're talking about. Would he say, next one comes up to you, yo! That's Neil's way of talking, Negro. Yo! Yo, what are you doing over here painting that graffiti? Yo! Jesus God. He would be funny. He would be an absolute clown, except for the fact that he's a big voice in the white racist South. Big ass voice in the South. Big O'Neill boards. Big voice. We need to get some guns. We need to arm ourselves. Kill these thugs. I want to see some corpses on the streets of Atlanta. Truth is, the crime stats in Atlanta have been going down steadily. I want to see some dead, you know, yo, urban thugs, yo. Neil Bortz. Neil Bortz. Hey, Neil, I'll tell you what, you go get your paintbrush, bro, and get out there on the bridge and cover over that graffiti. Get your ass on downtown and cover over that graffiti. Go ahead, Neil. Go ahead. Yo. Yo.
The devil bowed his head because he knew that he'd been beat. And he laid that golden fiddle on the ground at Johnny's feet. Johnny said, devil, just come on back if you ever want to try again. Because I told you once, you son of a gun, I'm the best there's ever been. He played, round and round, run, boy, run. Devil's in the house of the rising sun.
America, one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Andrew and his company, I think, Hexa Store, H-E-X-I-S-T-O-R, a proud supporter of Quality Talk Radio. Hexa Store provides online computer backup services for small to medium businesses. To learn more, visit hexastore.com. H-E-X-I-S-T-O-R, hexastore.com. Check them out. There is a website, ginandtacos.com. And my friend Bob Alexander sent this to me. And it says, Bob didn't write this. This is written by B-Squad. If I was a Republican who firmly believed that Barack Obama is destroying America and must be stopped in 2012, I would have spent the majority of the CNN New Hampshire GOP primary debate on Monday night sliding the barrel of a gun into my mouth and slowly talking myself out of it before repeating the process at 5-minute intervals. Since I'm not a Republican, I spent those 2 hours of my life, which unfortunately I can never get back, in absolute shock that there is a non-negligible chance that one of these drooling idiots will be the next president of the United States. Here's three observations. One, it's stunningly clear that in the side-by-side comparison that Mitt Romney is the only one of these candidates with half a functioning brain in his head. I think he's wrong about just about everything. More on that momentarily. But God forbid a tanking economy turns 2012 into an anyone but the incumbent election and we get stuck with one of these people. Romney might be a bad word, but better a bad word with access to the nuclear codes than one of these other vacant-eyed sociopaths. Can you imagine the godfather of pizza with the nuclear codes? No. Can you imagine Michelle Bachmann with, oh, Jesus, God, oh, no, please. Number two. The debate had nothing to do with answering questions or taking positions. It was kowtow to the donor base, evangelicals, and Tea Party night. Anyone else Enjoy the surreal sequence in which Pawlenty, Romney, and Bachman tried to out-tax cut one another. Romney proposed taking the corporate tax rate from 35 to 25. T-Paul one-upped him with 15% last week. Tonight, Bachman threw down to the tune of 9%. With no capital gains tax, no estate tax, and a tax increase on the lowest bracket, it was like watching three children fight over who loves mommy most. All seven debaters participated in a spirited round of, no, I hate Obamacare the most, followed by the requisite, who is the most pro-life pro-lifer, sparring match. The candidates, sans Bachman, didn't even look like their hearts were in any of this. Romney and T-Paul, in particular, had that McCain 2008 look of resignation, the one that shouts, I have to say this, but very little of me believes it. CNN's crowd shots were a great reminder of who these candidates were trying to impress on Monday evening. Dance faster monkeys, the bloated plutocrats are not impressed. And number three, the Republican analysts and talking heads are buzzing about a big opening, insert your own joke here, for Rick Perry. First, there's little more, that's little more than a polite way of saying, wow, these people are just terrible. Second, Rick Perry is quickly turning into Fred Thompson 2012, the maybe candidate on whom the party can pin its hopes of saving Republicans from this terrible field. In practice, a Rick Perry candidacy would probably work about as well as Thompson's campaign did in 2008. The party faithful are just using him as a blank slate on which to project their fantasies of a perfect candidate. In reality, Perry is a deeply flawed candidate or politician whose BS flies in Lubbock but doesn't scale up well to the national stage. And don't forget that every other candidate has a 2+ year head start on him in Iowa, New Hampshire, and other early states. The louder the drumbeat gets for a knight in shining armor to save the party, the poorer the odds that any such personality will actually materialize. If Perry thought he would walk away with the nomination, he'd be in. God help us all. Well, I didn't say that. That's what B Squad said. I don't believe in ghosts, imaginary figures helping us. Do you? The other thing about the debate the other night, the little bit that I watched, it sounded very much, you know, a different time, different place, a different century. A lot of differences, but the similarities were just horrifying. Back in the day, it was the Jews. Last night, it's the Muslims. Did you notice that? Not last night, but when was the debate? Monday night? Herman Cain, the pizza man, certainly made a spectacle of himself, according to the Baltimore Sun, by denying that he ever said he wouldn't appoint a Muslim to his administration, only that he meant he wouldn't be comfortable working with Muslims, especially those that want to kill us. Jesus Christ Almighty. Remember the Jews? The Jews were responsible for capturing Christian babies and bleeding them to death so that they would use the blood in their religious rituals, right? The Jews were a horrible threat to good Christians. They were filled with violence. They would kill your ass so quick that you wouldn't know what hit you. And now it's Muslims. Is there anything there to be a little bit concerned about? An African-American man, Herman Cain, talking about how he would be uncomfortable working around Muslims. But he really did say, even though he denies it, but he's a Republican, so he's a goddamn liar. He denies it, but he did say he would never appoint a Muslim to his cabinet. I wonder if he would get rid of Keith. Damn, drawing a blank on his name. Don't email it to me. It'll come to me. The only Muslim congressman in the U.S. Is Cain aware that numerous African-American Christians have voluntarily converted to Islam, most of them while they were in prison? Is he aware of that? Is Kane telling them that they have no chance for a position in his government, even the ones that didn't convert in prison, even if they're talented, because he can't tell them apart from extremists? Whoa! They all look alike, right, Herman? All those Muslims look the same, right, bro? Ah, you sound like Neil Bortz. And you know the irony? He and Neil Bortz worked at the same radio station. WSV, that's right. Every bit of racism that Herman Cain has, I believe, was injected into him in some kind of a mysterious ritual that Cain didn't understand, from Cain working for the same broadcast monster that spawned Neil Bortz. Yeah, they worked right down the hall from each other. As a matter of fact, they worked in the same studio. So the Baltimore Sun says, what is the litmus test for patriotism or loyalty to America? Will Cain appoint only those who are able to sing the national anthem without flubbing the lines? Will he appoint Christians who don't vote, who duck jury duty with flimsy excuses, who don't know the Bill of Rights or the Constitution because he doesn't feel threatened by them? Or because he thinks being Christian is proof enough of devotion to America and ability to serve in public office? And Newt Gingrich? He's no better than Cain. As the Baltimore Sun reports, it's laughable that Gingrich thinks Times Square bomber Faisal Shahzad's confession in court that he did not mean his oath of allegiance to the U.S. when he became a citizen is an example of general Muslim perfidy. So, who are Cain and Gingrich trying to score political points with? That's right, the base. There is, you know, much of a chuckle nut, moron, mass killer, war criminal that George W. Bush was. And I realize this was just theater, but he went out of his way, didn't he, post 9/11, to remind Americans over and over again that Islam was not the enemy. Terrorism was the enemy. And if you look at not so long ago history, I mean, a few years ago, the single most grievous act of terror in this country was committed by a white male Christian. The Republican Party has become once again a repository for racism, murderous racism. Get a gun. Go stack the bodies here in Atlanta. I wouldn't let a Muslim work for me. Sound familiar?
When you walk down a street with a cloud at your feet, you're in love. When you walk in a dream, but you know you're not dreaming, signore.
Conservatives, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Yeah, it was Keith Ellison. I'm sorry, Congressman Ellison. It gets pretty mushy between my ears sometimes. Thanks, Tom. This hour, sponsored by Andrew, his message, actually sponsored by Hexastore, a proud supporter of Quality Talk Radio. Hexastore provides online computer backup services for small to medium businesses. To learn more, visit them. Go to hexastore.com. It's HEXISTOR, hexastore.com. Thank you, Andrew, very much. The sponsorship. Check out his website, okay? Hexastore.com. HEXISTOR.com. The Islamophobia thing is getting way out of hand. I think every single Republican candidate now, it's just become an article of faith that you bust up on Muslims. How many Muslims in this country? A couple of million, I think. Would that be fair? A couple of million? But the comparisons now, or not the comparisons, but the language being used against Muslims, it's an echo. It's not exactly the same by any means, not yet. Just remember what Pastor Niemöller said, though. It's an echo of the early anti-Semitism in Germany, in Central Europe, actually. You know, the not so subtle comments, and then the comments that are not subtle at all, and then the comments that are openly hostile, and then the open hostility that starts to take form in the shape of action, and finally, working up or down that horrible chain, you wind up with the death camps. So I wonder if there is responsible Christian organization that will not mince words, but will tell their adherents to their faith, to their religious belief, that anyone who addresses this or who uses this kind of murderous bigotry against Muslims, anyone who does that, any politician who does that, should not be supported in any manner. I wonder if there are Christian ministers. I'm not talking about, you know, so-called liberal preachers or media figures who also happen to be, I'm thinking of Reverend Barry, you know, People for the American Way, Barry, or not People for the American Way, but Citizens United against, I can't, not Barry Gibbs. what's his name? Tom, what's his name now? Reverend Barry Powell. Can't think of it. Oh, well. I'm not talking about people like him. Of course, we know what his point of view is. But I'm talking about, you know, mega church evangelical ministers telling their congregations that any vote for or support of people who make these kinds of statements is a clear indication that the congregant is missing the point of Christ's message. Oh, never mind. What it up, you know. There it is. Thanks, Tim from L.A. Reverend Barry Lynn. So anyway, the Republican Party now has as its unspoken, one of its unspoken central planks, along with demonizing minorities, demonizing immigrants, whether, you know, this illegal immigrant, you know, the adjective there is a smokescreen. It's immigrant. It's immigrant. Putting more pressure on women, especially the uppity ones. I know. Michelle Bachmann, Sarah Palin, those are cartoon characters, okay? They don't mean anything. They're cartoon characters. I'm talking about the pressure put on women to get their asses back in the kitchen or the bedroom and shut up and stop this, what they used to call it, women's lib stuff. Demonizing poor people, redistributing wealth, all of these are planks in the Republican Party platform. One of the central planks is anti-Muslim bigotry. Now, we all know that religion is one of the most volatile and potentially murderous institutions in the history of the human race. Look at history. It's not political madness. It's religious madness. People will do things in the name of their God that results in the deaths of tens of millions of people. And it goes all the way back to the Old Testament. I mean, my God, go back and read some Hebrews. Go back and read some of the Old Testament. So we all know, and then look at the Christians, what they did, what they've done over history. Not just the Jews, look at the Christians, look at the Muslims. And you can go on and on. Religion is a murderous enterprise. It carries with it the potential of the kind of violence that could end human life in a village, a town, a country, on Earth. So for the Republican Party to prod and push with their little pointy objects, their little syringes to keep jabbing and digging at Islam, digging at Muslims, sending coded messages to their constituents. Hey, listen, Muslims are bad people. The Jews aren't very good either. Don't even get me started on the Hindus. We Christians have got to stick together. And you know what? The Muslims are the biggest threat ever. The Muslims. So how long does it take to keep pushing on that? Until we wind up with the equivalent of Treblinka. Anti-Semitism just goes on and on, doesn't it? Racism, anti-woman attitudes. And so much of this has as its repository the Republican Party. The sick, degenerate nest of cultists. This hour is sponsored by Anonymous. Really? Is that what I'm supposed to say here, Kathy? Anonymous. Thank you, Anonymous. Anonymous. Thank you. Our allies in South Asia, Central Asia, I guess, Pakistan, have arrested several people who allegedly were tied to the revelations of where Osama bin Laden was sequestered. The ISS, or ISI, I'm sorry, the Inter-Services Intelligence Agency, which is another name for We Are Torture, they arrested the owner of a safe house rented to the CIA to observe bin Laden's compound. Plus, what is being reported by the Associated Press is a handful of other Pakistanis. A handful. Handful. What's a handful? Handful of Pakistanis. In Pakistan, a Western official confirmed a New York Times report that five of the Pakistani informants who fed information to the CIA were arrested by the ISI. The official spoke to the Associated Press on the condition of anonymity because they were discussing sensitive intelligence matters. It sounds like just fascist arrest of people to me. The Times, in an article posted on its website late yesterday, said the detained informants included a Pakistani army major who according to officials in that country, copied the license plates of cars visiting bin Laden's compound in Abbottabad in the weeks before the raid. How many billions of dollars have we given to the Pakistani government? How many? It's a lot. Let me put it that way. A lot of billions. And, of course, Pakistan is a nuclear power. And perhaps they just don't like the idea of American drone aircraft violating their space. Now, think about it for a minute. we have committed acts of terror against Pakistan. There's no question about that. So let's say all of a sudden over New Jersey, that'd be a good place to start, there are drone aircraft flying in from somewhere, and they start firing the Pakistan version of Hellfire missiles into crowds of people in the United States. And the first time it happens, the U.S. complains, you know, says, hey, don't do that. And the second time, and the third, and the fifth, and the 20th time, finally, the United States realizes that Pakistan is not going to stop sending drone aircraft into our airspace, as if you can delineate airspace, for Christ's sake. But we do. Everybody does, you know. So they're flying these drone aircraft into our airspace and unleashing Hellfire missiles that are killing people. A lot of kids, a lot of innocent civilians, even though we would claim that all of our people are innocent civilians. Every American is an innocent civilian, except the ones in uniform that are on one of those 90 bases in 90 different, in 70 different countries around the globe. Those are not civilians, but here in this part of the globe, these are all civilians. So what do we finally do? Get to the point, Malloy. I'll tell you what we finally do. We send a couple of stealth bombers up. And within about 7 hours, Pakistan doesn't exist anymore. All that's left of Pakistan are burning holes in the ground. That's it. 80 million people dead, cities wiped out, mountains leveled, rivers rerouted, dams broken. That's what happens. So, are we to be surprised when the Pakistan government decides to arrest people who were providing information to an invader, that would be us, who keeps invading and finally invaded to the point of kidnapping someone whom the Pakistan government obviously was providing official sanctuary to? Now, we provide sanctuary to terrorists. We always have. The last one was Luis Posada. The guy, I think of it, or was it Carrillis? Or was that the same man? I'm sorry, I'm failing again here. But the guy who blew the, was it a Venezuelan airliner? Or a Venezuelan airliner loaded with the Cubans. And this terrorist blew it out of the sky. 100 and some people were murdered. He was wanted by Venezuela, by Cuba. And he wound up getting political asylum and protection in the United States. So, I mean, what's the difference? Will somebody tell me the difference? We harbor a terrorist, and God damn another country that comes and tries to take him out. Oops, I'm using that language. Another country that comes and tries to take him away or kill him or kidnap him. That person runs the risk of having his entire country glassed. But we, on the other hand, decide, okay, we've been looking for this guy for a decade. We know where he is now. We're going to go to get him. What about sovereign borders? Sovereign borders, my ass. We're going to go get him. What are you going to do to it? We're going to kill him. Okay. Seriously, can somebody, anybody, one of you right-wing cockroaches, maybe you can tell me, what is the difference between that scenario of, say, a Cuban drone, several Cuban drone aircraft flying under the radar, so to speak, into the United States in order to launch missiles to kill this guy who killed all these Cuban citizens? What's the difference between that and our raids and invasions of Pakistan? There's got to be a difference. What's the difference? Is the difference that we are a Christian nation and they are, they're Muslim. No. We have American exceptionalism. They're just Pakis. We stand for right and good and justice, and they stand for something else. What's the difference? Somebody, please. Anybody got any ideas? What's the difference? I'll wait. What was the point of providing them with billions of dollars just in the past decade in this phony-ass war on terrorism? What was that about? Was that about trying to buy the loyalty of the Pakistanis so that when we finally do go to war with China, if it is a ground war, which it probably won't be, we have the Pakistan and the Indian Army as buffers? Is that what it's about? I can't think of any reason to be giving billions upon billions of dollars. Not that I give a tinker's damn about the money. I couldn't care less. But that's how you decide the winners and losers in capitalism. Who has the money? Why are we giving the money? That's the way you keep score in capitalism. In a sane society, you would not use money to determine who's winning and who's losing. In the first place, you wouldn't be determining who's winning and who's losing anyway. You would be trying to figure out systems where everybody could, if not win, at least not lose. Oh, never mind. You right-wing jackasses don't have a clue what I'm talking about. But anyway, some of the audience that tunes to this program knows what I'm getting at. So what's the point with Pakistan? Why did we send, what was it, 20 billion, 50 billion, 60, 70, 80, 90? You know, the numbers are meaningless. It really doesn't mean that much. Like I said, the pallets of $100 bills that Bush and Cheney and the rest of these goddamn vultures sent around the world to anybody who would take it, as long as they promised to give us their oil and not, you know, send bombers over here, whatever. It really doesn't matter, does it? what the money was for. It doesn't matter when it gets down to the fact that the Pakistani government took the money and said, can you believe these can you believe these asses in the United States? They keep sending us all this money. And they think that, and they have demonized their political party, the one that's on the ascendancy there, is demonizing our religion. And they look at us very much askance because we are brown skinned. Some of us are almost, by God, black. Can you imagine that? They tell us we don't have an operating system here in terms of government that makes any sense at all. Why are they sending us this money? What do they want? Take the money. Take the money from these freaks. Take it. Take the money. They'll keep sending it because they're dumbasses. They're Americans. Keep taking the money. In the meantime, we'll do what we goddamn please. Now, what do we please? Well, eventually we're going to have to go to war with India. So we will take the money and we will use the money to build up our military so that when we finally decide to invade India, we don't want to throw our nukes at them because, you know, prevailing winds, all that radiation comes right. Ugh, it's a mess. I'm telling you, it's a mess. So we're going to do it with this massive army that will be built with the billions the United States has given to us. And then we're going to go after those goddamn Indians because we are still angry about what happened in 1948. Really angry. We'll get them. Hindu bastards. We'll get them. So why is anybody in this country, especially in our leadership, surprised to find out that the Pakistan government has busted a handful of people who assisted the CIA in snatching Osama bin Laden from the sovereign territory of Pakistan? Why are we surprised about this? And how much longer are we going to continue to send money to Pakistan? Not that the money matters. Like I said, I couldn't care if they emptied Fort Knox and dumped it all in the middle of Islamabad. I couldn't care less. Could you? Do you care? But like I said, in capitalism, that's how you decide the winners and the losers. Who's got the money? It's very important. Very important. Who's got the money? Insanity. Isn't it? Isn't it sanity? Bruce writes, there are the public statements that they are on our side and the billions they take for it. They could throw our diplomats out and ask China to come in to protect them. Of course, India might panic and wipe them off the map if they did that. China already gives them more money than we do and might see them as a potential colony without the U.S. in the picture, or at least no need to lavish money on them. Their nukes come from China, so I suspect the reason nobody's really excited about them having nukes is that China holds the codes. Come on, Bruce. Come on. What are you telling me? That nobody in the Pakistan military knows how to load one of those suckers onto one of their aircraft and drop it in downtown Mumbai? Come on. Come on, Bruce. We'll be right back.
Progressive talk. It's Mike Malloy.
Do you support the president and the war for oil? Do you think the sun's belong there on someone else's soil? How far is it from here to Nuremberg?
5 before the hour. The war in Libya, the NATO attack on Libya, CNN is reporting a bipartisan group of House members led by Dennis Kucinich, Democrat of Ohio, and Walter Jones, Republican of North Carolina, were to file a lawsuit today challenging U.S. participation in the Libya military mission. Meanwhile, Barack Obama is set to defend U.S. military involvement in Libya to Congress, according to the White House. This information comes from the Institute for Public Accuracy. Meanwhile, House Speaker John Boehner, Republican of Ohio, said in a letter to Obama on Tuesday, yesterday, that the administration could be in violation of the War Powers Resolution if it fails to get congressional authorization by Sunday coming, which Boehner notes will be the 90th day since the mission began. I thought it was 30 days. Oh, well. Bruce Fein. You will remember Bruce Fein. He looks a bit like a ferret. He was Deputy Attorney General under Ronald Reagan. He said today, quote, "The statements of President Obama, Secretary of Defense Designate Leon Panetta, and Senator John McCain that the president is constitutionally crowned with authority unilaterally to initiate war in the national interest is a page out of George Orwell's 1984. Every word uttered at the Constitutional Convention and ratification debates and the Constitution's text confirm that only Congress can authorize war. The rule of law ends when, without a constitutional amendment, the Constitution today is treated as a homonym of the Constitution when it was drafted and ratified. Sounds the same, but means something entirely different." Well, now, I find it very interesting that Bruce Fein is talking Constitution. I'm trying to think. When Reagan invaded Grenada, did he do so with an act of Congress? As far as I know, we have not had a congressional declaration of war since December 9th, 1941, or was it December 10th? It took a couple of days after the attack on Pearl Harbor for Roosevelt to get a congressional authorization to declare war on Japan, Germany, Italy. I guess that was it at the time, right? So, Lyndon Johnson did not have a declaration of war. What is Bruce Fein talking about? I mean, why is he singling out the warmonger we have in the White House today? What about the warmonger we had who invaded Iraq and Afghanistan? What about the warmonger we had who invaded Iraq before? How about the warmonger we had who invaded Serbia? How about the war? I mean, Jesus God. It just goes on and on and on, right? Pappy Bush invaded Panama. Did he get a declaration of war to do that? What is Bruce Fein talking about? I guess he's just making an historical point. Yes, well, the Constitution says. But, Mr. Fein, I'm sorry for the comment. You look like a ferret. It just so happens you do. I'm sorry. It's just, you know, a fluke of nature, whatever. But surely, Mr. Fein, you were only making an historical statement. You were not using your statement to imply that Barack Obama should be any different from any president since 1941. Are you? Are you holding Barack Obama to a different standard than the how many presidents since 1941, who committed all sorts of acts of war with nothing? I mean, they came up with something called the War Powers Act. Where is that in the Constitution, you Republican cockroaches? Where is the War Powers Act? Where does it say that a president of the United States has authority to invade anyone he wants as long as he goes back to Congress within 30, 60, 90 days and gets permission? Well, what is that? And most presidents don't even do that. So, Mr. Fein, my only question to you, I certainly agree with you. I really do. I think you're absolutely spot on. But why apply that rule to Obama? without applying it to every single president since Franklin Roosevelt. Or maybe you have. I don't know. Maybe you have done it. I don't know that much about your book, Constitutional Peril, The Life and Death Struggle for a Constitution and Democracy. And I believe you also wrote American Empire Before the Fall. Blah, blah, blah. Bruce Fine. Francis Boyle, professor of International Law, University of Illinois, College of Law in Champaign, the author of Tackling America's Toughest Questions. He said today, after 60 days, Congress must expressly authorize ongoing military operations unless Obama asks for another 30 days, which he has not done. And Obama's Libya war was unconstitutional to begin with. Boyle added, the lawsuit filed by Dennis Kucinich and Walter Jones is a cop-out of their constitutional responsibilities on the part of Congress. These issues have already been argued and lost before in Campbell versus Clinton, where the court ruled that members of Congress did not have standing to sue. The real remedy here is a bill of impeachment against President Obama. The courts are not going to pull Congress's chestnuts out of this constitutional fire for them. Well, yeah. And the remedy against all the preceding presidents was a bill of impeachment, which is an indictment depending upon the testimony provided to the House Judiciary Committee. But we don't do that anymore. We are not a constitutional democracy any longer. We are not a constitutional republic either. Or we're not a democratic republic. Pick your choice of words. Depending on where you fall on the political spectrum, you're going to pick one of those three descriptions. But we are not any of them. And now, the bill before Congress, or has it passed? To give the president, any president of the United States, total authorization to invade anytime, anywhere, for any reason, with no congressional authorization. Zero. Jesus. Oh, I don't know. It can't be all that bad, right? It just can't be all that bad. Or can it? Constitutional authority to declare war. The act that the human species and only three or four other species in the entire animal kingdom does. Organized assault on another group of the same species. We and two or three others, so that's about it. But I think the framers understood that while human beings are warmongers, war is where we get our tales of heroism, bravery, patriotism, all that stuff. You don't get that from obeying traffic laws. You get that from going to war, charging up a hill or rescuing your buddies under fire or, dropping an atom bomb on Hiroshima or, whatever it is. All those wondrous acts of heroism, firebombing Dresden. The Blitz against London. Those are acts of heroism. Depending on which side you're on, it was heroic of the Brits to resist. It was heroic of the Truman administration to drop atomic weapons on Japan. It was heroic of the Germans to invade Austria. They needed living room. So there is a debate now about Barack Obama's illegal activities. Well, as I pointed out to a caller a week or so ago, this was a NATO operation, right? And then, of course, I got an abundance of emails telling me I was, not saying I was crazy, but saying, come on, Mike, you're splitting hairs. Who runs NATO? Who funds NATO? Who organized NATO? Who dictates NATO? Okay, let's continue to split hairs. As long as it's a NATO operation, though, boys, it's still a NATO operation. I mean, you know. I realize we're all living in a house of mirrors. I realize it's all madness. It's all insanity. But unless and until the United States unilaterally starts bombing Libya, it's a NATO operation, isn't it? Huh? Or does that not apply any longer either? I don't know. Madness abounds. This hour has been sponsored by Anonymous. You don't suppose... Nah. Thank you, Anonymous. We appreciate it. Very much. Next hour, I'm going to tell you about a woman named Destiny Mathis. Wait till you hear her story. And what else is coming up? Oh, yeah, the just more stuff about these evil Republican cockroaches in the U.S. House. I mean, it just gets worse by the day. Just gets worse by the day. It really does. There is a new newspaper in Abu Dhabi. It's Abu Dhabi's first English language newspaper. It's called The National. And according to The National, today, their issue today, it's online, the U.S. has conducted more than 15 drone attacks in Yemen since the beginning of June, a Yemen Defense Ministry official said. As a result of those attacks, 130 Yemeni citizens have been killed. The increase of such attacks, according to The National, is part of U.S. strategy to employ more drones to curb what the U.S. believes is a growing terror threat in Yemen, reported on Monday by The Washington Post and Wall Street Journal. The U.S. plans to begin supplementing U.S. military drones with CIA drones because U.S. officials say the political chaos in Yemen has compromised its effort to contain terrorists in Yemen. That's according to The Wall Street Journal and The Washington Post. U.S. officials say the Yemeni government has approved the aggressive use of drones. The Yemeni government says, no, we haven't. Tariq Sharni, the ruling party spokesman, said, quote, the Yemeni government did not allow the U.S. to conduct random attacks in the country, though it has agreed to cooperate in the fight against Al-Qaeda, end quote. Over the past month, according to this article in The National, there have been at least 7 U.S. drone attacks in Shabwa province, where the U.S. believes terrorist Anwar Awlaki is hiding. The latest attack was on Saturday when a drone missed its target and caused no casualties. Other drones fired on Shabwa allegedly killed civilians. A drone targeting Mr. Awlaki, quote, killed two teenage brothers, end quote, said the official. Blah, 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 blah. This is the way You might want to read this. It's the National, Abu Dhabi's first English language newspaper. You get, as you know, I mean, some of you already do this, but you get an entirely different perspective on what's going on in different parts of the world. We have the American perspective, and then we have the perspective of the victims. Mr. Abdul Jabbar, director of a research center in Abu Dhabi, said, quote, the attacks will increase and the U.S. will help in turning Yemen into a terrorist stronghold. The United States is going against international law and killing people because of suspicion, end quote, Mr. Abdul Jabbar. No, not the basketball player. On Saturday, a drone targeting an Al-Qaeda suspect missed and killed three civilians. It goes on here. There's no point. You know, we don't do body counts, do we? Ahmed Kulani, head of the observation committee formed to help evacuate residents, said more than 40,000 people have left Abyan province because they fear the drone strikes. Families are not planning to return to Abyan anytime soon. A housewife, Salma Jaafar, who left the province last week and headed to Aden, said, quote, who can we complain to for the death of a relative? We will not come back to this city. End quote. This is how we create enemies. So how many wars are we in now? Anybody know? I mean, the ones that we know about. Not wars, but, you know, occupations, attacks, bombing raids, Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, Yemen, where else? I know I'm forgetting a couple of big ones, right? How do we... How does the President of the United States, authorize drone attacks? Are drone attacks something different from attacks by U.S. and NATO military fighter jets? Is it different, a drone? Is a drone different because there's no pilot? Not, you know, a pilot in the drone, obviously. But what is the difference? The second time tonight I've asked for an explanation about the differences. I'm not quite sure what the difference is in what we are doing in Libya and what we are doing in Yemen, except for the fact that Libya is a NATO operation. Come on. And Yemen is a CIA operation. Is that the difference? Plus, the Pentagon is involved in the drone attacks in Yemen. This is getting ridiculous, isn't it? You know what's happening? Pretty soon people are going to start pining for the bad old days of the Bush crime family. Wouldn't that be shocking? And there's still an awful lot of liberals, especially out there in media, who just insist that, you know, hang with Barack Obama because, you know, if we don't, oh my God, do you know what would happen to the United States Supreme Court? We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. past the hour or thereabouts. So this letter, I'm going to share this with you. 26-year-old woman, her name is Destiny Mathis. And according to, I think I got this from Huffington Post, she began campaigning for Barack Obama back in 2008. And her life was tough, but she had hope. After graduating at the top of her class in 2005 and raising two children on her own, she was helping her mother at the same time, who was battling cancer. Destiny Mathis said, "I campaigned for him hard. I got the shirts made, the Brock, the boats, shirts made. We've done a lot." Anyway, about 2 years into Obama's term, things took a turn for the worse for Destiny Mathis. She gave birth to her third child. Now, keep in mind, this is Indiana, where they are defunding Planned Parenthood that offers pregnancy prevention advice and actual help in that. Anyway, Destiny decided to write Obama a letter. She's in the position of she can't afford daycare, and she can't get a job. She says, "I wrote him just expressing my concern about what's going to happen in the next couple of years. I know he's under a lot of stress, but I need to see some results." And to her surprise, she received a handwritten letter from Obama in return. But it's been nearly 8 months after she sent the letter, and things have not improved for her. So she has decided to sell the letter in order to avoid being evicted from her apartment. That's the gist of this story. She said, quote, "We need to move as soon as possible. We need a three-bedroom. I'm not working, and no one is giving me a chance," end quote. So out of desperation, this young woman contacted a guy named Gary Zimmet. He's the president of Moments in Time. That's his company. Zimmet has sold 8 handwritten letters from President Obama. He also sold the actual Schindler's List and other pieces of American history. And he said the handwritten letters from Obama on White House stationery are extremely rare, and he hopes to sell this young woman's letter for about $11,000. He said she's really a sweet person and needs some money desperately. The young woman said, quote, "I'm just a little bit weary of the promises that he's made. I really haven't been seeing any kind of changes that affect me directly. We need the money so we can move into something that's compatible with the kids and to help us out. We're really, really struggling. It's hard for us right now," end quote. All right, here's what she wrote to Obama several months ago. And then I'll tell you what he wrote back. "Dear President Obama, my name is Destiny Mathis. I'm a 26-year-old single mother of 3. I'm hoping that you read my letter and respond so that my family has a sense of hope going into the next year of your presidency. I'm a resident of Northwest Indiana, where the unemployment rate is hovering at around 9.5%. I'm struggling daily with the uncertainty of today's economy. I'm a surgical technologist and have been practicing as one for 6 years. I graduated at the top of my college class in 2005. I recently lost my job in January due to the birth of my third child, a baby girl named London. Unfortunately, I'm one of the dreaded 99ers in need of help. I'm scrambling to figure out what the next few months will bring for my 3 children and me. I can say the future for us looks extremely," all caps, "extremely bleak and unpromising. As I look back on when I first heard you were running for office, I was excited but optimistic at the same time. With my mind made up to support this change, I campaigned in my neighborhood and got Barack the Vote t-shirts made. When you were elected, I cried. I even tried to see you when you came to Highland, Indiana, but I was with my mom because she had cancer at the time. She is now in remission. With the midterm elections, a thing of the recent past, I stopped to think if things are going to get worse, because the Republican control of the House, boy, are they ignorant. I do think people are coming down too hard on you and your administration. An eight-year mess cannot be fixed in only 2 years' time. I'm still behind you 100%, and so is my family. My dad is a disabled Vietnam veteran, and he tells my seven-year-old son, Silas, that he should strive to be just like you. I tell my two-year-old daughter, Milan, that she will be as strong as Mrs. Obama, and to not be like me. I'm not sure she understands what I'm saying, but it makes for good conversation. My ultimate goal is to go back to school for nursing. I want to be able to support my three children and help out my parents who have stood by me through everything. I'm so afraid that this dreaded economy is going to have my family, or leave my family, homeless, my parents included. The housing market has hit my parents very hard with paying for medicine and insurance. My mom continues to work as an occupational therapist, and my dad retired from the United States Postal Service in August 2009. So, Mr. President, I hope that the next 2 years will bring great hope to my family, not to mention the several thousand other families who are in similar or worse situations. I'm prayerful that things will turn around, and with the grace of God, I hope we all pull through. Your response, no matter how short, would be appreciated, and that hope my family would need to make it through this storm. I know you're very busy, but if you can find the time, it would be a blessing. May God bless you, Mr. President, and your beautiful family. I also ask that God continues to bless your presidency and administration. Thank you for taking time to read my letter. I've enclosed a couple of pictures of myself and kids. My parents are camera shy. Thanks again. Sincerely, Destiny Gabrielle Mathis. Here's the response. Destiny, thanks for the moving letter and the support. You have such a positive spirit. Please know these things will get better for you and your family. You inspire me, and I'm rooting for you. God bless, Barack Obama. So, it has come to that in the United States, where a young woman, granted she has way too much responsibility, a single mother with three children, but she stayed in school, she did graduate, she does have certification of some sort that qualifies her for a job, she's 26, she's been working since she was 20, finally got laid off, has dreams and hopes and ideas, wants to be an RN, doesn't know how she's going to do it, and then came up with the idea of selling the short note on White House stationery from Barack Obama in order to pay the rent and just give her and her three kids a moment's worth of hope. Now, while this young woman, Destiny Mathis, was writing to the president, the Republicans in the House were planning something entirely different for women just like her. And women not just like her, and their infants, and their children. Yeah, the Republicans. When we come back from the break, I'll tell you what that is.
I sat down on the sofa and I watched the evening news. There's a half a dozen tragedies from which to pick and choose. The baby that was missing was found in a ditch today. And there's bombs flying, people dying.
ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's More Mike Malloy.
So at night I sit and I watch the stars to stay.
21 past the hour or something. Yeah, 21. Who knows? All right. So there you had the story of Destiny Mathis, 26-year-old woman, three kids, struggling, got her as much education as she could afford at the time, been working, now not working. Unemployment's running out. Nobody's helping her. Nothing is available for her. How about this? Republicans have maneuvered to prevent a House spending bill from chipping away at federal farm subsidies. Huh? You know, subsidies. They go to a large percentage of this money, millions and millions of dollars, goes to farmers who don't need this. As a matter of fact, the farmers can make as much as $750,000 annually and still receive subsidies. But the Republicans went ahead with large cuts to domestic and international food aid. The Republican move will probably prevent, it says here, up to $167 million in cuts, prevent these cuts in direct payments to farmers. That means they'll continue, including some of the nation's wealthiest. Now, this action, along with the Senate's refusal yesterday to end a $5 billion annual tax subsidy for ethanol gasoline blends. Can you believe this? $5 billion in subsidies for ethanol gasoline blends. Subsidies to the oil companies. Subsidies to farmers. But the annual bill to pay for food and farm programs next year would cut food aid for low-income mothers and children by $685 million. So women's, infants, and children's the plan? $685 million, 10% gone. Gone. Now, direct payments to farmers. How often have you heard that from fiscal conservatives? Well, we got to stop this. First of all, it keeps food prices higher than they should be. Secondly, it pays farmers, among other things, for not growing crops. It does. And third, a farmer can be making, or a farm corporation, let's be real, can be making as much as $750,000 annually and still receive subsidies. How many times have you heard that? Well, we got to cut these farm subsidies. It's not going to happen. The subsidies have survived for years, along with tens of billions annually in other subsidies for farmers, because this powerful coalition of farm state lawmakers in both parties has protected them. It's Republicans, for the most part, that want to cut aid to women and children who desperately need help right now. But it's Democrats as well as Republicans that continue to funnel hundreds of millions of dollars to a segment of this population that doesn't need it. And nobody gives a damn. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. Another amendment on this bill would have dipped into direct payments that are used to pay a $150 million annual payment that the U.S. makes to Brazil as a settlement in a World Trade Organization dispute over cotton subsidies. Now, think about that for a second. In the first place, what the hell are we doing paying a fine to Brazil of $150 million? That's an annual payment. I have no idea what the total is. Because somehow we got in the way, or American cotton farmers got in the way of Brazilian cotton farmers, so we're going to pay through the ass for this, see? $150 million a year. Representative Rosa DeLauro, a Democrat from Connecticut, got an amendment In the Appropriations Committee version of this farm subsidy bill that would shift the Brazil money to the Women, Infants, and Children program. Screw Brazil! You know what I'm saying? I mean, really? And to hell with the World Trade Organization. Where does that money go? Who benefits? Capitalists. Corporatists. These neoliberal bastards who continue to destroy everything they touch. And what happened to Rosa DeLauro's amendment? The Republicans have said it's going to go nowhere. They're not shifting money that goes from the United States to Brazil because of some, I guess it would be a lawsuit if it were real, but it's not real. It's through the World Trade Organization that has nothing whatsoever to do with someone like 26-year-old Destiny Mathis in Indiana, who's just struggling to survive and has to sell a letter, a note from the president to pay her rent and to buy food. Jesus. Before the hour, back to this this federal farm subsidy bill that the Republicans decided to write in a manner that would continue hundreds of millions of dollars in farm subsidies, but at the same time cut domestic food aid, including the Women, Infants, and Children plan. We talked about this a couple of months ago when this first came up. And even an attempt by Representative Rosa DeLauro, Democrat from Connecticut, to shift money that goes to Brazil as a result of a World Trade Organization dispute between the United States and Brazil over cotton subsidies. So we pay them $150 million a year as part of the settlement. I have no idea what the case was. I have no idea how long the $150 million goes on. I really don't care. This is a rich man's game. This is a global trade capitalist game. And it has nothing to do with you and me except for the fact that it sucks millions of dollars, ultimately hundreds of millions of dollars, out of the pockets of people in this country and pays Brazil. Not that I have anything against Brazil. I wonder, is it rich farmers in Brazil that got pissed off because rich farmers here had a leg up and there were too many farm subsidies here? That's what we're talking about, right? So the Brazilians said, wait a second. You're undermining our ability to compete on the global market because you subsidize your farmers. We don't do that here. Pay us! So the World Trade Organization said the United States pay them. How often do you hear about this stuff? Me? Never. Never until it comes up in an article like this or in a circumstance like this. So while these filthy capitalist-owned Republican cockroaches in the U.S. House agree to continue hundreds of millions of dollars in subsidies to farm subsidies to wealthy individuals and corporations in this country. Every time you turn around, these bastards are sticking it in just jamming it into another body orifice. Do you ever get that feeling? They don't care, these capitalists, these Republicans. They don't care at all. But a 26-year-old in Indiana who now has to sell a note from Barack Obama in order to pay her rent, what attention does she get? Nothing. And people like her? Well, here's what we're going to do. And when I say people like her, I mean young mothers with young children who do not have an income. I don't care if they're married, single, divorced, gay, straight, Jew, Gentile. Doesn't make any difference. They're in the circumstances that they're in through no fault of their own. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. That's right. I forgot the Reagan picture of the welfare queen. We know that was a black woman driving her Cadillac to pick up her welfare check and then driving her Cadillac to the grocery store to buy T-bone steaks. We all know that's real, right? Jesus, God. So Rosa DeLauro, Democrat from Connecticut, tries to get an amendment into this bill that would redirect the $150 million a year we're paying to Brazil into the women, infants, children, the WIC feeding program. Feeding program. Pregnant women, toddlers, babies. For the Republicans say, hell no! The only infant Republicans like is a parasitic clump of cells inside a woman's uterus. And even then, they don't like it. But they will defend it because their whole objective is control of women. It has nothing to do with love of children or babies or infants. You hypocritical sons of bitches. You're just vile, you right-wingers. You are vile, every one of you. So, Representative DeLauro, Representative McGovern, Jim McGovern of Massachusetts, a Democrat who pushed to restore the money cut from food aid, and other Democrats argued on the House floor yesterday that the cuts to food aid programs are reckless and should be restored. How did the Republicans respond to that? They said, well, the Women, Infants, and Children program is flush with reserves, and therefore the cuts will not decrease participation in the program. You filthy cockroaches, every single one of you. May you rot in hell. May everybody in your family someday be hungry and facing homelessness. And may you at that time, you Republican cockroaches, may you then have to deal with the Republican House yourselves that will turn to your family and say, sorry, eat your bootstraps. Oh, by the way, this bill the Republicans have put together will also cut the Food and Drug Administration budget by almost 12%. The net effect will be straining the agency's ability to implement a new food safety law signed by Obama earlier this year, right? Who needs food safety? You know, I mean, take away, take away the possibility of medical coverage by, first of all, making it extraordinarily impossible for single, unemployed people, or even working people, married people, I don't care, to get health insurance. Take that away from them by turning your health insurance program over to rapacious, greedy capitalist bastards who are not in the business of health care. They are in the business of profit. Okay, so do that, which will guarantee millions of people, tens of millions of people in this great land of the free and home of the brave who cannot afford health insurance, for Christ's sake. Health insurance cannot afford it. Unless they're absolutely destitute, and then they can get on Medicaid. Except there's an awful lot of healthcare providers that won't accept Medicaid payments. Why not? Because they are what, 40, 50, 60% below the cost of a procedure or a doctor's visit? You know, just beat the living hell out of poor people. Beat them down. Kick them in the ass. Kick them in the head. Stomp on their children. Keep doing it. Just beat them into the ground. And then take money away from the Food and Drug Administration so that when they are able to put a few bucks together to go buy some goddamn food, it may be polluted with E. coli. And then what? They get sick, and then where do they go? They go to the bathroom and puke. That's what they do. And they continue to puke. And they get dehydrated, and they have diarrhea, and there's no place to go because nobody will see them. They don't matter, do they? So 26-year-old mother in Indiana has to sell a note on White House stationery from Barack Obama in order to pay her rent. A woman who graduated from some sort of school. She has some sort of certification. She is employable, except, oh, that's right, there are no jobs. And Barack Obama will damn sure make sure that the financial services industry and the banksters and the insurance industries and all of these massive sons of bitches in New York who continue to shuffle paper, jigger the price of everything, they will be well taken care of, right, Mr. President? What did I read in the Times the other day? Barack Obama decides to try to make nice once again with Wall Street so he can get money for his reelection campaign. Are you effing serious? Yes, they are. They're totally serious. Hey, Mr. President, you know the woman you sent the little note to? She's going to sell your letter. The dealer thinks she can get 11 grand for it. After his commission, what would his commission be? 25% maybe? What will that leave her? 7,000? 8,000? What's she going to do with that? Rent for a three-bedroom apartment in Indiana where she lives? I have no idea what it costs, but maybe a grand? A month? Huh? Could it be that much? That little? I don't know. I have no idea. If it's $1,000, so she got 8 months of rent from your note. Then what? Then what? Meanwhile, your Republican buddies, Mr. President, in the House are cutting food aid to American women, American babies, American children. How does that feel, Mr. President? Do you care? Are you aware it's happening? If you're not, why not? Yeah, you know, when it finally gets bad enough, I can move, I can leave, I can get out of this hellhole of a country. But Destiny Mathis and her three children, I don't think they probably have the same mobility that I have. You know what I mean?
Up in Gainesville town, the lights flashing down the long dirt road, when they asked me to step out, I said we've been looking for illegal immigrants. Yeah, we'll check your car, say it's funny, I think we were on the same boat back in 1694. I said, la 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 la, shame on you, they'll be dancing. La 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 la, shame on you, say it. La 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 la, shame on you, shame on you. La 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 la, shame on you, shame on you. I said,
close tonight. I have a letter, or, well, I don't know if you call it letters, from Cindy Sheehan. You know who she is. She writes, recently I was listening to KGO Radio, and in case you don't know, KGO is the ABC affiliate superstation here in San Francisco that can be heard by millions of people with its mega wattage transmitter. Gene Burns happened to be the host at that time. The night I was listening, Mr. Burns was wondering why the U.S. is bombing Libya, but not Syria, because Syria is, quote, torturing and killing children, end quote. And Mr. Burns didn't know how the people of the world could stand by and watch this happen. I wish I could have gotten through on the call-in line because I would have asked Mr. Burns how he feels about the USA torturing and killing children in places like Libya, Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Yemen. These are the active places the U.S. is bombing. But what about the children that were held or are being held in places like Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, Abu Ghraib in Iraq, or Bagram Air Force Base in Afghanistan? Why are the so-called people of the world standing by and watching the U.S. destroy civilization as it murders and tortures children? It is my suspicion that even the most hardcore war supporter knows that women and children are the ones that suffer the most from war. But as War Madam Madeleine Albright, Clinton's former Secretary of State, notoriously said in an interview with Leslie Stahl of CBS years ago, the slaughter of over 500,000 Iraqi children during the sanctions period of the Clinton regime was, quote, worth it, end quote. Monsters don't always have to have long claws, bloody fangs, or inhabit our nightmares. They can look like somebody's grandma. And that's what I call a waking terror. As a mother of a victim of U.S. imperialism, my well of empathy is bottomless. But I'm not like Gene Burns. I don't think we should be upset only when so-called rogue regimes kill or torture children, because the U.S. is the largest rogue regime in recorded history. The rogue empire counts on people like Gene Burns to provide cover for its crimes, in part by oversensationalizing the crimes of others. Because the definition of collateral damage is hard to pin down, remember what General Tommy Franks said, we don't do body counts, it is hard to guess the exact number of children that have been killed by the U.S.'s war of terror since 2001. In fact, it's almost impossible. But a safe guesstimate is hundreds of thousands. And one was exactly one too many. What I can do for you is tell you some statistics on how children are treated here in the U.S. Number of homeless children, 1.5 million. Number of hungry children, 16.7 million. Number of children living in poverty, 13 million. Number of children without health insurance, 10.6 million. Juveniles incarcerated in the United States' jails and prisons, 92,854 as of 5 years ago. Number of children the U.S. has detained at Guantanamo, 22. Number of children Syrian forces are accused of killing, 30. Children should be the ultimate expression of love, joy, and hope in all societies, and I'm not trying to excuse Syrian forces for what has happened. Killing or torturing a child or an adult is an abomination. But what I'm trying to do is put things in perspective. Why should the dark forces that run the U.S. care about murdering brown children without odd-sounding names in faraway places when it doesn't even care about the children here within our own borders? Last Sunday on CBS's Meet the Press, war monster Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina said that the time was, quote, very close, end quote, to attacking Syria. And it's time to let President Assad know that, quote, all options are on the table, end quote. If we do attack Syria, then the Nobel Peace Prize winning President of the United States would be at war with at least six countries. I hope that Lindsey Graham is just having a wet dream about Syria, but I fear he is correct. Because the U.S. can't allow anyone else to kill people. Our war machine already has a near monopoly on murder. Cindy Sheehan. I think the part that is so difficult in approaching impossible for me, just, you know, I'm talking about me. I don't know what your, where your limits are, where you've drawn your boundaries, how many times those boundaries have been crossed, and like me, you've used denial and avoidance to pretend like the borders weren't crossed, and maybe your parameters need readjusting, and you know all those ways that you and I use, all those methods we use to justify continuing to support what we are supporting by living here, by going through the farce of voting here, by paying taxes here. It's becoming more and more and more difficult to do that, to support the kind of hypocrisy that talks about these foreign regimes killing children. And here in the United States, we have a record of bloodlust against kids, not just kids here, but kids around the world, that would stagger Vlad the Impaler. I'll be off tomorrow and Friday, and Monday and Tuesday, Brad Friedman will be filling in for me. I'll see you next Wednesday. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.